The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have. Told you turn the other cheek, and they made it with a bat. Fucking protesting them citizens. Told you go fight in the war. Vietnam, you died, good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around a pump crack right up in your city. And they turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called a national guard up because we ride with our guard up. And that was blood in your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. The one that you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
For those of you. Good afternoon. You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind these enemy lines. Today's date is December the 21st, 2015. It is a Monday afternoon. I hope that you all made it through the weekend okay, because we know lots of things happen, not good things happen on the weekend with so many people, you know, using alcohol and trying to relax and whatnot. And so we just hope, you know, that you did not fall into any other traps set out there and everybody made it through the weekend safe and sound. We do have a guest scheduled to join us today. We are scheduled to speak with Mr. Lawrence Grandpre, the Assistant Director of Research and Public Policy for the Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, which is a grassroots organization based in Baltimore. He will be joining us to discuss some of his observations during the trial of William Porter. For those who don't know who William Porter is, he is the first of the six Baltimore police officers to go on trial. In fact, his trial is over. It ended in a hung jury. And so we wanted to speak to Mr. Grandpre, since he was an observer there, and I imagine taking notes, he's been quoted in the media about some of his observations. So we hope that he will be able to join us today so that we can learn from him about what he saw. Again, you know, William Porter was the first of six Baltimore police officers who were charged. He was the first one to go on trial in Baltimore in the killing of Freddie Gray. Also, after we speak to him, if I have time, which I probably will, but the last of the presidential debates for the Democrats occurred over the weekend. They had a debate on Saturday night, and so a lot of people were asking the question, you know, that's an odd time to have a debate. I mean, really? So anyway, they had the last debate for the Democrats on Saturday night. I think it was in New Hampshire, if I'm not mistaken. And so I want to just analyze some of the issues and some of the answers that were given by the candidates. Now, I do have one quick observation. And I noticed that for the third time, because there's only been three Democratic debates, and that's supposed to be it. It's all done. So even though, you know, you got a while until the nomination process plays out and they actually pick somebody, but hey, we don't need them to be debating each other on about the issues and whatnot. So at least that's the attitude of DNC. So anyway, one of the quick observations that I made is that for the third time, this is the third time that Bernie Sanders had a national audience and he failed to mention the Justice Is Not For Sale Act, which is a bill that he co-sponsored. And this bill, again, this bill is called the Justice Is Not For Sale Act. I believe it was introduced in November or late October. And it would abolish private prisons and jails in this country. Isn't that a big issue among a lot of people in this country right now, particularly the black community? And he's doing black voter outreach. And indeed, the black voting block is an important voting block. So you would think that since African descendant people, black people in the United States are disproportionately affected by modern day slavery and human trafficking. Yeah, I know they call it mass incarceration and whatnot, but I call it slavery, as the film and the book calls it, slavery by another name. The 13th Amendment, as I will continuously to point out, does not abolish slavery. It makes an exception for slavery as punishment for crime. So Sanders' bill would abolish private prisons and jails in this country. And you would think, again, this is at least the second time. I don't recall when the first Democratic debate was, but I know that bill had been introduced into Congress prior to the second Democratic debate. And so on Saturday night, that was the third Democratic debate. And so he had at least, that I can, you know, pretty much confidently say, he had at least two opportunities to tell a national audience about this historic bill. And it is a historic bill in that it is probably one of the first abolitionist bills. Well, really, I can't say that the first abolitionist. I was going to say the first abolitionist bill or piece of legislation to be introduced into the Congress prior to the Civil War or immediately following the conclusion of the Civil War with the ratification of the 13th Amendment. Again, which really doesn't abolish slavery, so I wouldn't even call it abolitionist legislation because it didn't abolish slavery. So, but anyway, this bill would abolish private prisons and jails. You know, a lot of people, I don't think they know just how much private prisons, or I should say the private prison corporations, the modern day enslavers, are behind a lot of this legislation, have been behind a lot of this legislation that has led to the United States having the world's largest prison slave labor force. And that is exactly what they are. They are prison slave labor force. And so how do you not mention that during a national debate where you have a national audience? I do not. I just can't think of it in any logical terms as to why he would miss the opportunity to mention that bill. And in fact, I really haven't heard him talk much about it since its introduction, since he co-sponsored that, and him and Keith Ellison, I think Keith Ellison's a senator out of Minnesota, since they did a press conference on the bill. I guess Keith Ellison is going to be helping him push it through the Senate. If indeed Keith Ellison a member of the Senate or House of Representatives, I can't recall right now. But they introduced that legislation. Well, they had a press conference in November when the legislation was introduced. And since then, I really haven't heard anything about it from anyone. Really. No, not even Bernie Sanders himself. Now, I have not been able to obviously attend all of the different little places that he's been going to meet with voters and, you know, these campaign functions and events and whatnot. So I have no idea if he talked about that bill at any of those events. But I'm still saying, though, you have opportunity to reach millions of people and tell them about this historic piece of legislation that would abolish private prisons and jails, the very industry that is behind all of the criminal justice policies that has led to the United States having 25% of the world's prison population, even though it only has 5% of the total population of the world, but 25% of the prisoners. So I've heard other people say, And I tend to agree with them. It is looking like that more and more. I can't say for certain. Obviously, maybe it's some incompetence involved. But it is looking like Bernie Sanders is merely a fluffer for the Democratic base. All right. Just merely a fluffer. For those that don't know what a fluffer is, it is a porn industry term. That is where a person who's, let's just say, not a porn actress, but is an employee who keeps the male porn actor aroused. And so perhaps that is what Bernie Sanders is doing. He's acting as a fluffer for the Democratic Party to keep the Democratic, particularly his progressive base, aroused and you know, just energized and ready to go out there and defeat the Republicans and whatnot. And, you know, and then later on, he's going to drop out. And, you know, so many people think that he is a sheep herder for the Hillary Clinton campaign. And I'm starting to say that, you know, these people have some very, very strong arguments to make that case. Because, again, how do you participate in such a debate and never even bring up such a historic deal? Now, he did mention at once, one time during the debate, that he had introduced the bill to end the federal ban on cannabis prohibition. For those that don't, I'm talking about weed. If you don't know the scientific term for weed or pot or whatever. But yeah, he did mention that once, but only once, you know. And so, again, I'm starting to think, like other people are thinking, that Bernie Sanders is merely a fluffer. He's just merely a fluffer for Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party. Let me see. I am showing a missed call, and I'm not sure if this is the guest. I'm sure I gave them the studio line. Let me just do a quick search on this. I'm showing a missed number on my... Okay, no, I don't think that that is from our guest. All right, that's a North Carolina number. Somebody called the business line. So, yeah, we're waiting on Mr. Grand Prey to join us. But obviously, I can't hold up the show while we wait on him to call in. We contacted the organization that he is a part of. Again, the name of that organization is the Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle. And we've had a couple of those activists on the program in the past. We contacted them last week to try to arrange an interview today, but I did not get confirmation today, as we sent a reminder. So we hope that he will join us. If not, no problem. Things like that happen. There's a mix-up. We can always reschedule them. But so, since I don't have, since I don't want to wait for him to call in, let's just go ahead and jump to my analysis of the Democratic debate that took place on Saturday night for the Democrats, where you had Hillary Clinton as a participant, Bernie Sanders, and Martin O'Malley, a former mayor of Baltimore, actually, and a former governor of Maryland as well. And so that took place. Now, I took notes, you know, I sat there through the whole thing. And I took notes. So let me find my, because I took like 3 pages of notes. One of the first things that I noticed during the debate is they started up about the alleged, the way that the Hillary Clinton campaign tried to portray it is like members of the Sanders campaign hacked into proprietary information, voter information that belongs to the Hillary Clinton campaign. I did learn that this wasn't the first time that there has been such an issue with the vendor's firewall going down. And so, but when I was reading like articles about it, the way people were writing their articles, which I think that most of those people in the mainstream media are surrogates of Hillary Clinton or proxies of Hillary Clinton, because I see the same people writing about the Democratic side of the debate, and they don't seem to be objective at all. They seem to be Clinton fluffers, if you will. Clinton fluffers. So the first question was about that breach, and the way they was writing it up was like, you know, Bernie Sanders himself hacked into the server and stole this information from the Hillary Clinton campaign. Now, I wasn't really too concerned about that. Of course, obviously, the person who they said looked at the data, and this was the second time that this happened, but the person they said part of the campaign who looked at the data was fired. Yeah, he was fired. And so there's still an investigation going on immediately. The DNC, which is being run by, I think, what's her name? Debbie Swasserman, something like that. Swasserman is the DNC chairman right now. And so the way it seemed to me is that, you know, it wasn't really that big of a deal, but they tried to make it a big deal and whatnot. And what it reminded me of is I'm like, Hillary Clinton is the last person that should be talking about somebody hacking into a computer or somebody spying on her campaign or somebody doing something inappropriate to get information or steal information. And I don't know if many of you recall that in 2009, well, it was actually 2010 when we found out about it due to the WikiLeaks cables, that while Hillary Clinton, and I think this also occurred when Condoleezza Rice was running the State Department, but I do know in 2009, I recall the stories when they came out, is that Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State directed State Department employees to spy on UN employees, UN ambassadors, and, you know, whatever their titles are, even the UN Secretary General, Ban Ki-moon, and whatnot. She ordered State Department employees to spy on these diplomats, and not only spy on these diplomats, but to steal their personal information, like credit card information. They wanted to find out, based on the cables that I read, what they wanted to do was try to see if any of these diplomats had mistresses that they were buying gifts for or meeting at hotels and things of that nature, so that then they could use that as leverage to get a UN diplomat or ambassador to vote however they wanted, the United States wanted them to vote, okay? And that's probably how they were able, and I'm going to talk about this, but that's probably how they were able to get a UN Security Council resolution to overthrow Libya and then turn it over to those terrorists that's running it today, that are also using it as a base of operations to jump off into Syria, to jump off into Europe, and other points and whatnot. So, a lot, you know, if I was Sanders again, you know, I don't know if this guy, is just trying to be a sheep herder for the Clinton campaign or the Democratic Party, being a fluffer for them to keep people excited about the election and give this, you know, false illusion that, you know, the process is really playing out in a democratic fashion and Hillary Clinton hasn't already been chosen and already has the nomination on lock, which, you know, it pretty much does kind of seem that way. But that's probably how the State Department was able to get a UN Security Council resolution for the, what I call the illegal invasion of Libya and all the atrocities that occurred after that. So she, if I was Bernie Sanders, I would have been bringing that up. I would have been, you know, how dare you accuse us of such impropriety? How dare you accuse us of such criminality when in 2009, Madam Secretary, and I don't even know why they even still call her Secretary of State or whatever, man. She don't have that title no more, so I don't know even know why they refer to her as that. I'll just call her Mrs. Clinton, you know. But I would have brought that up. How dare you sit up there and try to act like, you know, we did something criminal when you were Secretary of State. You directed State Department employees to spy on members of the United Nations, which is a violation of international law. this woman is nothing but a criminal. I mean, I can go back decades and you know, go back to the 90s and talk. Even before that, when her and Bill was in still in Arkansas and how they were partnering up with, at the time, was Wackenhut, which was the precursor to the Correction Corporation of America, which is the world's largest private prison enslaver. So, I mean, this woman has a long history of documented criminality. And so how could Bernie Sanders not take every opportunity to point out that this woman is a criminal thug, man? You know, masquerading as a grandmother or something like that, you know. So anyway, that was one of the first things that I noticed, and what came to my mind was the, and y'all can look it up, it's been much written about it, when the Secretary of State or the State Department in 2009, through the WikiLeaks cables, it was exposed that they had a spy ring going on. And pretty much the State Department has always been a den of spies. All right. That is why when the United States, and this got brought up during the debate, when the United States illegally overthrew the government of Iran, the democratically elected government, and then teamed up with Islamists to take over the country. But that is why they then targeted the UN, what would they call it, the UN embassy in Iran, because they know it's a den of spies, man, during the revolution. I'm sorry, let me back up. I misstated myself. They didn't team up with Islamists at that time. They did that in Libya. What they did do is install the Shah of Iran, a very, very brutal dictator, and that got brought up. So the State Department has a long history of being a den of spies. I think it was through the Dick Cheney's. I was about to say the Cheney administration. Might as well call it the Cheney administration, because according to a lot of people, you know, Bush wasn't really in charge. But we found out through him, through the Cheney's actions of exposing Valerie Plame as a CIA agent. And who was she married to? But a U.S. ambassador working for the State Department. That might not even been a real marriage for all we know. That could have been just a cover. Who knows? But when Joe Wilson, I think that was his name, Ambassador Joe Wilson, who wrote the New York Times letter, I think he at the time, and my memory's kind of foggy on that, but was saying that this so-called intelligence that we're getting from the Bush administration on why Saddam Hussein having chemical weapons and weapons of mass destruction, which was the term that was used, WMDs and whatnot. And he wrote that New York Times op-ed piece and saying that, you know, there's really no credible intelligence to back that up. And then next thing we know, Valerie Plame, his alleged wife, is being outed as a CIA agent. So, you know, again, you know, if you know the history of this country, you could pick up on a whole lot of stuff when you hear these politicians talking about it and whatnot, and your mind will go to those related things in history. Let me see, among my other notes that I took, Sanders. Yeah, I don't even want to talk about that one. That's kind of petty and kind of minor. I don't even know why I wrote that down. Clinton was talking about unknown threats. That was brought up, and going after ISIS and talking about global terrorism. And then there was the mentioning of the internet, ISIS using the internet to recruit. And, you know, she also made those comments about Donald Trump that he didn't like. When she was saying that he is ISIS. Well, I don't like calling them ISIS, but ISIL, let's call them ISIL. ISIL's biggest recruiting tool. And again, this again echoes the comments that have been made by even Donald Trump himself about the internet and people talking about, you know, how ISIS is recruiting and radicalizing people over the internet. And because I've been on the internet for over 25, 30 years, you know, back in 1999 is when, so about 20 something years. I know, you know, about IP addresses. Also, I manage websites, build websites and things of that nature. I know the United States and has the ability to shut down any kind of internet operations of anybody around the world. They certainly can do it. You know, they can certainly get Twitter to stop allowing people to create, you know, certain accounts from certain IP addresses and whatnot. So, you know, don't believe the hype. I think that, again, the internet is always under assault with so many people turning to social media, which, you know, you could call what I'm doing now a form of social media, or you could call it alternative media. You can call it the independent media, but it is through social media that we distribute a lot of the things, media that we produce, as well as a whole lot of other people. And studies have shown that more and more people are turning off the corporate news propaganda and getting their news straight from the internet and getting it from people on social media, whether they're independent media producers or whether they're just, you know, individuals who in their spare time do research and, you know, make comments and posts on social media about, you know, their political analysis. But more and more people are turning to social media to get their information. And that is what I see this as. I see this as a bipartisan effort to, again, clamp down on the free and open internet. So I think that is why she was bringing that up. Talking about these unknown threats and whatnot. Listen. The type of attack that happened in San Bernardino, you cannot stop that. There's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do. And then, you know, now we know that these people were not on Facebook. The FBI was saying these people were not on social media posting anything about ISIL or anything of the sort. And so, you know, it's very hard to stop something like that, you know. And while people want to only frame the attack when it comes calling it terrorism when there is an Arab or a Muslim involved, but we have many terrorist attacks that occur in this country concerning just one shooter with a semi-automatic weapon who is able to take out a whole bunch of people. There is nothing you can do to stop that. There's nothing you can do. Nothing. All right. The only people that get caught is the people who are dumb enough to go on Facebook and be posting, you know, their little ISIL flags and whatnot as their background, or running their mouths and about ISIL and not realizing that, you know, that's really just a proxy, another proxy for the CIA that has gotten out of control, you know. And so, there's nothing you can do about that, and that's one of the notes that I made, you know. And a lot of it, I feel like, has to do with, if you really want to stop the radicalization of people, then you need to stop practicing racism, you need to stop practicing religious bigotry, but more importantly, you need to, and Bernie Sanders did kind of hit on this several times, but you need to stop doing regime changes in these countries. You need to stop going. I thought he was channeling Ron Paul or someone like that, you know, because Ron Paul has frequently talked about blowback from the CIA going in and other intelligence agencies, along with the MI6 and Mossad and other of their allies and whatnot, going in and overthrowing these countries and whatnot. And so, you know, if you really want to stop all of this so-called terrorism or Americans being targeted, then you need to stop what you're doing. You need to stop trying to, as Bernie Sanders said, police the world and getting involved in stuff that you don't have no business getting involved with. Mind your own business. Stay in your lane, you know. But, of course, their business is global domination in the name of global profits and whatnot for these corporations. Let's see. O'Malley said that we have failed to invest in intelligence gathering. He did take a dig at Clinton on Libya. All right. So here's the thing. They got all the human intelligence that they could ever hope for. All right. Listen. I think I reported, I'm not sure if I did it on when I start doing these video broadcasts in addition to go along with our radio streams, but I know I talked about on this program in the past about France being warned about those impending terrorist attacks in Paris. Not only France was warned about it, but all the NATO countries that are involved in Syria were warned by not only the Iraqi intelligence agency, but also by Mossad, by the Israelis. All of those governments were warned about an imminent attack that was supposed to take place on that weekend. Don't take my word for it. I'm not giving you some kind of conspiracy theory, even though I don't trust the corporate media. Every once in a while, you know, they do will mix in some truth with their lies. And this was reported on by the Associated Press. All right, this was, and of course, it was not brought up by CNN. It wasn't brought up in the debate. The fact, you know, they didn't even frame it in a manner of saying the Iraqis and the Israelis warned France, warned the United States, warned Turkey, warned these other countries involved in Syria that there was an impending attack that was supposed to occur over the weekend. So what happened? Where was the breakdown? Why wasn't the public warned? What precautions could they have done to stop this attack, you know, or minimize the damage that was done? That wasn't even mentioned whatsoever. And independent media producer, they have a YouTube channel called The Color of Change. Not The Color of Change. I'm sorry. We Are Change. We Are Change. I think their website is wearechange.org. They've been around for a while. I can remember them, you know, out on the campaign trail doing interviews and whatnot in 2000. I think even back during, yeah, I think prior to President Obama running in 2008. So they've been around for quite some time. And they reported on this as well, that France, along with the United States and other NATO countries, again, Associated Press is the first that I saw reported, but the We Are Change on their YouTube account, they did a report. And do you know the government of France blocked them in France, and so that their YouTube channel can't be seen in France? So all of this garbage about intelligence, we don't have human intelligence on the ground and all this and that's a bunch of BS. Don't believe that crap. It's a bunch of lies, and that's why I put up there as Exhibit A the Israelis and the Iraqis warning you of those impending attacks that happened in Paris. All right. So again, you know, these people, they're not really trying to be truthful with you. Sanders hints that global wars breed terrorism, says Muslims must lead the fight against terrorism. Now, I think he mentioned a Muslim king. I was going to call him a dictator, but I guess we could call a king a dictator, because if he has absolute rule. But I think he was talking about, I may have the name wrong, King of, is it Abdullah? The King of Jordan, I don't have, you know, I'm not even going to look it up. But the King of Jordan has said that Muslims in Arab countries, I imagine, should be leading the fight against ISIS. It shouldn't be the United States. It shouldn't be France. It shouldn't be Britain. It shouldn't be any of those countries. It should be Arab countries. Because as Bernie Sanders quoted him, said that it is a war for the soul of Islam. You know, and there has been proxy wars going on between Iran, which is a Shia Muslim country, and Saudi Arabia, which is a Sunni Muslim country. There have been proxy wars going on in that region between those two for a very, very long time. So there has always, well, I should say for a long time, been a war within Islam. You know, just like there was a war in Christianity between the Catholic Church and Protestants, you know, with Martin Luther breaking away from the Catholic Church. And I think people call him the father of the Protestant Church and whatnot. So I happen to agree with that. Why should men and women, most of them young people in their 20s, be dying on a battlefield? you know, way across the world and being the world police again, you know. So I agree with him on that. And he made a very valid point. And whatever that king's name is, you know, well, what's stopping them? Stopping them? What are they, you know, dependent upon the U.S. tax dollars that they get? And therefore, since they are getting these handouts from the U.S. government, all this free money, all of this military equipment and whatnot, you know, so, you know, he who pays the piper names the tune. And so is the United States government naming the tune and not allowing those countries to take the lead on this. I can't say for certain, but I thought that was interesting. Clinton says defense against radicalization starts in Muslims, in the Muslim community. I mean, there's some truth to that, but really, if you want to stop radicalization, and I'm not just talking about Muslims, I'm talking about if these were real instances, like, for example, the young black male who allegedly traveled from Baltimore and went to New York. I think that was after the killing of Eric Garner. I don't think it was after the killing of Freddie Gray in Baltimore. And he said he was going to put some wings on some pigs and allegedly traveled to New York and shot two NYPD officers before killing himself. What do you think radicalized him? Well, police terrorism is what radicalized him. Terrorism radicalizes people. And that is what I call what is going on in terms of the United States foreign policy. I look at U.S. foreign policy as terrorism against the non-white, non-Christian nations of the world. They are engaged in acts of terrorism. How can you not call it terrorism? You don't think that the people in Pakistan are terrified that if they decide to go to the market that day, that, you know, somebody who might be on President Obama's kill list might also be at the market? And, you know, here comes a drone and just blows everybody to bits. You know, is that not terrifying? That's terrorism. That is terrorism. And they are using those drones as an intimidation tool, just as they are using it as an assassination tool. They're using it as an intimidation tool to send a message to the rest. That's all of these civilian deaths. Now, again, I was, to my shame, a participant in the first Gulf War. I was a very young man then. I was not well informed about the military industrial complex. I wasn't really informed about how corporations are running the agenda of the U.S. government and many other governments of the world. I just wasn't up on that at the time while I was stationed there during the Gulf War. I was reading Malcolm X's biography, which really, you know, started me on a real path to consciousness and opened up my eyes to a lot of stuff. But I had a top secret security clearance. I worked in the S3. I had access to a lot of information in terms of the estimated number of casualties that was being created. In case y'all have forgotten, remember President Bush, the first one, H.W. Bush, not Bush, not the second one, not W as they call him, but the first Bush. Remember, he was talking about bombing them for, 30 days or 30 nights, 40 days or 40 nights, a play on the Arabian fable or whatnot. And, you know, I mean, man, I saw they killed a whole lot of civilians, all right? They killed a lot of civilians, and I can't really share too much more information on that because I don't know if it's been declassified or not. But I saw, let's just suffice it to say, that they killed a whole lot of civilians with them bombs, dropping them bombs like that in Iraq. Do you not think that that would radicalize somebody? You know, most certainly it does radicalize people. So, you know, we want to blame, well, not we, because I'm not part of that garbage that USA Inc. is involved on. I don't condone it. I don't support it. And so I'm not part of that we, you know, and we had to be careful about who is we, because Scotty ain't in that we. You know, we ain't did nothing. All right. We ain't killed nobody. So, you know, when she talks about just the Muslim, like, you know, these ISIL groups and these other radical so-called jihadists. Groups are radicalizing people on the internet by posting videos of people getting their heads cut off and whatnot. No, that ain't what radicalizes people. What radicalizes people is the fact that you got police over here racially profiling people, terrorizing people. You got white people that are racist, that are standing outside the mosque with semi-automatic weapons in their intimidation rallies. They call it expressions of their First and Second Amendment speech, but I see it for what it is. It's to intimidate those people with the threat of violence. That's what that is, okay? And so, let me just do a quick check. Again, we were scheduled to speak with a guest today, but we have not heard from him at this time. Just want to check my lines and make sure that we don't have him hanging on. No, it must have been a mix-up in the scheduling. So let me go ahead and continue. Man, time really goes by fast. Let me say, yeah, if you want to stop radicalization, stop doing what you're doing. Stop your imperialism. Stop the domestic state-sponsored terrorism against communities of color, against religious minority. That is the kind of stuff that radicalizes people. They were talking about strengthening the background checks and closing gun show loopholes. I do remember talking about on this program about the letter that was sent to President Obama by about, I think if I recall correctly, 140 different members of Congress, and they were calling on President Obama to use the power of the executive officer office to close those gun show loopholes and to strengthen background checks. I mean, do your research. And this was like right after the San Bernardino attacks, and you know, they said that he has the power. That it's obvious that a Republican-controlled House is not going to advance any such legislation. But there are things that you can do now, like preventing people from expanding the background checks to prevent people who have been, I guess, on domestic violence orders of protection, you know, have been filed against them, to prevent them from going out and buying weapons. And what those are things that could be done right now. And I talked about this, that this is like a red herring. This is one of those hot button issues that the Democratic Party really has no intention of doing anything about in terms of strengthening gun control and whatnot, which I am not really for. I'm for sensible background checks and you know, closing the gun show loopholes. But I am not one of those people that's about to give up my guns. Okay, I'm surrounded by terrorists in this area that I live in. You know, my family during the 60s was attacked. Right, you know, the house is no longer here. It's been replaced with a new house. But on the property that I'm on right now, there was a terrorist attack by Klan members against my family. And the only way that my grandfather and his sons was able to defend the homestead was by guns. They had guns all over the place. And we still have those same guns, okay? So I'm not about to give up those guns, and I live behind enemy lines, surrounded by potential terrorists out here with their Confederate flags and all their foolishness and craziness and whatnot. So, but again, this is a hot button issue that the Democrats could have done something about in 2008 while they were also working on the Affordable Care Act, and they did nothing. When they controlled the House and the Oval Office, they did nothing, all right? And same with the Republicans. They don't plan to do anything to restrict abortion. How many election cycles do we have to hear about these two things before people wake up and realize that there is no intention to do anything legislatively about these things? But, you know, I just wrote that down because I was like, you know, why isn't anyone mentioning that President Obama? You know, why didn't Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton or Martin O'Malley say, if I'm elected president, I will close those loopholes using the power of the executive office for which President Obama refuses to do right now, even though 140 plus members of Congress asked him to do so, and he hasn't done it. See, this is, again, this is to keep you riled up and turned out, turning out to vote with promises to do something that these people have no intention of doing. And, you know, I've been voting since I was 18 years old. I'm 47 years old now. I didn't see enough elections to peep that game. Let me move on. President Obama can close loopholes. I just spoke about that. Ban on Muslims. We need whistleblowers was one of the things that was brought up. I mean, that's just totally insane. That's just totally crazy. And of course, they were referring to Donald Trump. But in terms of saying whistleblowers, we need people in the Muslim American community to be whistleblowers. Well, as was pointed out, that's how many alleged plots, you know, we don't have any way of verifying it, but that's how many of these alleged plots allegedly have been stopped, you know. But a lot of times, you know, we find out that FBI informants, somebody on the payroll of the FBI, would go out and recruit homeless people, people who are already, you know, political activists or inclined to, you know, do something more, and they would put these thoughts in their heads, and then even actually come up with the actual plot, and then that, you know, supply the materials and whatnot. Obviously, the materials aren't going to work and whatnot, but then, you know, then alert the FBI. Yeah, I got these guys set up, and they come in and bust them, and next thing you know, you hear, oh, the United States stopped the terrorist plot. Well, one of their informants is the one that initiated the whole thing. So, I mean, there's plenty of cases like that, but one of the things that really stuck in my mind when they said whistleblowers is the fact that whistleblowers in the United States government are constantly under attack. They are constantly under attack. You look at Jeffrey Skilling, the man who blew the whistle on the CIA torture program. I think it was this year, he got sentenced to prison. You look at Edward Snowden's on the run. All right. You look at Chelsea Manning locked up for blowing the whistle on just how many civilians that the United States military was murdering overseas. I could think of many more cases. You look at the drone operators who, I think it was earlier this month or late November, former drone operators blew the whistle to tell people. They had a press conference in New York, which was not widely covered by corporate media. Again, none but propaganda is really just a part of the government. It's not really independent from the government. Do your research, all right? But you had those former drone operators who suffering from PTSD, and they had a press conference telling how many kids they were killing, how many civilians were being murdered in this program, this drone program of the United States. And now they are under attack and being investigated, and, you know, they're plotting and planning to see what they can charge them with and whatnot. So, you know, when I hear them talk about whistleblowers, and I mean, even when we look at terrorism by the police, every once in a while, you do have cops who are really wanting to be community oriented police, who really do want to help the community and are really out there to stop crime and really help people. Well, when they witness, you know, all of this criminality, all of this terrorism going on around them, and they, you know, report on somebody, hell, they get turned on by the police unions, get turned on by their fellow officers, and they get set up to be killed or whatnot. Like, if they get in a situation they need backup, well, backup might not be coming. You know what I'm saying? They get threats. I mean, do your research, people. So, you know, talking about whistleblowers, you know, yeah, we need whistleblowers. But when the people who blow the whistle on state-sponsored terrorism and criminality, what happens? They go after the whistleblower. That's the country that we live in, people. Y'all need to just face the facts that this is not a moral society that we live in. It is a very corrupt society. All right, that is bent on fooling you with its propaganda. Let's see here. Let me move this out the way. Let me see if there anything else that I need to address as we get ready to shut it down. Ferguson effect. Yeah, let's talk about the Ferguson effect. Now, the moderator of the CNN debate talked about the Ferguson effect, like law enforcement officers coming out and saying, oh, they're pulling back from policing and putting themselves at risk because they don't want to get caught on video murdering somebody. Well, the best way to not get caught murdering somebody on video is don't do the murder. Don't murder people. That's how you don't get caught on video extrajudicially killing someone. It's not to murder them. Let me see. We got a phone call. It looks like that is from my assistant, CC. CC, if you want to call back in, I missed your call. It came in. I got the notification. It probably came in kind of late. I don't know how many times the studio line was ringing, but if you want to give us a call back, please do so. So that whole Ferguson effect, I'm like, why is CNN even asking that dumb question? Why are they advancing this police union propaganda? Why? I don't, you know, and again, I know why. Do you know why? Because, you know, they want to push this false narrative about policing in this country. All right. And so, you know, if it was really true, let me go ahead and pull up killedbypolice.net. It's been a while since I visited their database. Now, if police were really, really pulling back, I would not be seeing right now all of these people listed as casualties of police, shooting them and killing them. Let me see. Well, we've had one today. We had some male in California. Don't have all the details yet. We had a male, Latino male in Texas get killed yesterday. Let me see. 1, 2, 3. Yesterday, mostly Hispanics killed yesterday. Let me see. Had a white male killed on the 19th. 1, 2, 3, along with 3 other people. Let me see. I mean, so every day somebody's being killed by police. So how the heck do you figure that they pulling back? That Ferguson has had this chilling effect on officers that they can't do their jobs because for fear of getting caught doing something on camera and it ruin their careers. Look, you shouldn't be afraid of getting caught on camera if they're not doing anything wrong. Like those murderous thugs up there in Chicago. And now, you know, now information and video is coming out on these Los Angeles deputies that murdered this man and then claimed, you know, one of the deputies shot the other deputy. I mean, is that not some Keystone Cop type crap, you know? And so, you know, this man is riding his bicycle with earbuds in. And so they want to go after him. This is what the media reporting. So, you know, you have to just, you know, consider the source. They don't always report the facts and whatnot. And they don't always have the facts. A lot of time they just regurgitate what the police tell them. Right. And so here this guy on his bike, and it's reported that they went after him for a suspected DUI while riding his bicycle. All right. So they tackle this guy, get him on the ground and whatnot. Then this one deputy pulls out his gun, ends up shooting the other deputy. Then he lies to the other deputy and says he shot you. You know, the guy that they had on the ground saying he shot you. Then this cop who got shot gets mad and shoots the dude 3 times in the back. And then they concoct this big old giant lie. Then the rest of their gang members come out there and trying to shoo away the witnesses and threatening them, pointing their guns at them and telling them to stop recording and to get out of here and chasing them away and whatnot when they should have been, you know, getting names and stuff. Because those people were telling them, you know, you need to get off that man. You done shot him. He's dying. What are you trying to do? Make him suffocate to death or whatnot? And so, again, you know, if you don't want to get caught on video doing stuff like that, then don't do stuff like that. What is this Ferguson effect crap? You know, again, that's the mainstream media, you know, pushing a false narrative pushing the police agenda is what they're doing. And I hate the corporate media. You know, I really do. Because I've been peeping their game for a long time, especially when I started studying COINTELPRO. If you don't know what COINTELPRO is, look it up. All right, look it up. I've played clips on this program in the past about the Frank Church, or I should say the Church Committee hearings in the Senate, exposing the CIA and FBI planting stories in the American news media. And whatnot, to lie to you about what the Black Panther Party was doing, just like they lying to you today about what Black Lives Matter is about, just demonizing anybody who would stand up for their rights, their human rights. Let me see. What else do we got here? Clinton acknowledges systemic racism, but she, and I had read an article about that. I think somebody had written about Bernie Sanders is the only one that mentioned, you know, police terrorism against Black people in this country. And although I don't like for it to be framed in terms of race, because, again, I look at the databases like Killed by Police, and while white people are not disproportionately killed by police, there's still a whole lot of them getting killed. All right. We want to look at the raw numbers. Ain't nobody getting killed more than white males, all right, and many of them unarmed, just like all the unarmed Black people. But I don't like to frame it in terms of race when we talk about police terrorism and whatnot. And the reason I don't like to do it, because then you paint the picture in the wider public's mind that it's only happening to Black people, or it's only happening to Hispanic people. And it don't happen to white people, or it don't happen to Asians, and it don't happen to immigrants, or you know what? I'm like, police terrorism is police terrorism no matter who is being committed against. And, you know, I was on Facebook. I follow because I do, you know, I would consider myself a prepper. If you don't know what a prepper is, look that up. But that's somebody who prepares for emergencies in case the grid goes down, in case, you know, the Fourth Reich wants to raise this ugly head here in the United States. And the Fourth Reich, obviously, I'm referring to the Nazis, because America was the original Nazis. Nazis came here to study their eugenics programs and then took them back to Germany. So I am a prepper. And so, yeah, I am a prepper, and so I do prepare for a lot of this stuff. And let me just go over my notes. So I just don't like people to frame it in the context of it's only happening to Black people. Now, I have had people say to me, when I highlight cases of white people, when I showcase white people, unarmed white people getting murdered by police, I even have had Black people say to me, you know, not a whole lot, but one or two say to me, why you care? Why you care about them white people? I only care about Black people getting killed. Well, obviously, if Black people could stop police terrorism all by themselves, if we would have been done it, don't you think? We would have been done it. And so you need the dominant population to get involved and to be politically motivated. You need to have them see themselves as the victim. So, yeah, I had lost my train of thought. Getting back to prepping, I follow Modern Combat and Survival on Facebook. And so they had sent out this report, or they were saying, you know, you could put in your email and get this report. Is America becoming a police state? Right. And I've heard Alex Jones, who I don't like, always talking about, you know, the United States is becoming a police state. The United States, for certain people, for certain groups, for certain communities, has always been a police state. It has always been a police state going back to the 1600s. You know, do you not know that you have police departments in this country that are older than the United States itself as a government, as a republic, which is no more, which is now a corporation? That's why I call it USA Inc., since it incorporated in 1871. And so, you know, I see that as a form of racism by omission. When I hear white people talking about, a coming police state, that means you're totally ignoring 400 years of the police being involved in oppressing non-white people in this country. Who the heck do you think was enforcing Jim Crow laws? You know, the what everybody now today, you know, will publicly, you know, state that Jim Crow laws were wrong, they were unjust and whatnot. People will publicly state that. Well, who the heck do you think was enforcing that? Police were. All right. Who do you think was harassing free Africans and free black people in this country in the 1600s, in the 1700s, and asking them for their papers and whatnot to make sure that they were really free and they weren't some escape, you know, African off somebody's plantation and what? The police, man. The police. The drug war. And then this person, you know, responded to me and said, I have worked in policing. And so I know it's not a police state yet. I'm like, dude, don't make it about you. The context, I've given you 400 years as the backdrop of policing in this country. So don't tell me that a police state hasn't existed for hundreds of years in this country as it pertains to non-white communities. But I told that person, I said, did you ever arrest anybody like a grown person for weed possession or any kind of drug possession, a non-violent victimless crime, all right, where they didn't harm anybody else? We can argue all day long about people doing harm to themselves, but they have that right. You have the right to harm yourself if you want to harm yourself, all right? It's not a crime for you to smoke cigarettes even though it'll give you cancer. It's not a crime for you to eat fast food, your diet to subsist of only fast food, which is going to lead to probably diabetes and all kind of health problems and whatnot. That's harming yourself, all right? So it shouldn't be against the law to harm oneself, and everybody doesn't harm themselves when they use certain substances medicinally. But I asked him, if you ever arrested anybody under the guise of the drug war, then you were enforcing a police state. And he didn't respond, so maybe he accepted of that. But I did notice, and other people noticed, that they were, and they did not spend a whole lot of time answering that one question concerning racism. But it's good. It is good whenever you can get white people in such high positions of power, like a senator, like a former secretary of state, like a person like Hillary Clinton, to admit that there is systemic racism, you know, because to do otherwise is to lie, you know. And again, you know, not to make it about race, because we have proxy races. We got black people in this country that won't even admit that systemic racism exists. They want to then talk about some black on black crime as if white people don't commit crime against each other, you know, in huge numbers and whatnot. So, you know, we even got black people. I think Ben Carson he's never gone as far as to acknowledge systemic racism in this country. So it's good whenever you can get anybody, you know, in these high positions to admit that systemic racism exists. Not that we need confirmation from them, the evidence speaks for itself, but it's still always good when they do acknowledge that. So I'll give Hillary Clinton 1 point for acknowledging the obvious, okay? So anyway, but Sanders had the more, I would say, more passionate, is that a word I can use? The more passionate response in terms of police terrorism and how non-white people, and he specifically said African Americans, are being gunned down in this country. Now here is another thing. They did talk about rethinking the drug war. It's one of the things that Sanders brought up, and I think it was mentioned that the police should reflect the community that they're policing, meaning that if it's a black community, the police force or the people going that are assigned to that district should be primarily black. All right. That right there, to me, that's not a solution. Because as I have pointed out in the past, that you got all these black cops, you've had black cops, I think since the 1960s, might have been the 1950s when the first black cop was actually given a chance to be a paddy roller a neo slave catcher and whatnot. And I'm like, you know, we don't need any more cops. That's not going to solve the problem. Because, you know, if you look at the Baltimore trial, two or three of those are black cops involved in the killing of Freddie Gray. We look at the killing of Walter Scott, even though a white cop did the shooting. You had a black cop who then helped him to cover it up by filing a false police report, which it would have been covered up if not for, you know, the Dominican immigrant who came here and recorded it and then turned it over to the media. Yeah, so we have black cops at every level, whether they're our police chiefs or police captains. Yeah, black cops supervised the strangulation of Eric Garner, you know, black woman. She supervised that. And so, again, you know, I am not for these superficial so-called solutions. I am not that ignorant to think that black people can't be just as corrupt, and if they are all of a sudden going to have empathy or compassion for their victims, because they operate on quotas, man. You know, if they don't write a certain number of tickets, if they don't make a certain amount of arrests, then guess what? They ain't going to advance in the modern slave patrol. So they are required by the profession to do things that are harmful, to enact policies that are harmful to the black community, all right? And to every community, if you ask me. So, yeah, that kind of stuck out to me. And I know I missed all of my breaks, but that's how it is when you are the one producing your own program and you don't got anybody keeping you on task. So, again, this is Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. Apologies, we did not get our guests to join us today. Perhaps there was some mix-up on the date, telephone number. Something came up. Those things happen. We will try to reschedule them. Again, we were scheduled to speak with Mr. Lawrence Grandpre, the Assistant Director of Research and Public Policy for the grassroots organization Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle. Black Talk Radio News airs on the Black Talk Radio Network every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. Visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com. So, you know, Sanders mentioning that, and I have seen some of these grassroots activists think that that's going to solve the problem by getting more black cops. Look, man, what black cops have you seen that have made a difference in the system? I mean, maybe one or two, but hell, we see one or two white cops blowing the whistle on some of these corrupt cops. But for the most part, we're talking about the masses of them. They, you know, are blue. They behind that blue line. They got that same gang mentality as other gangs out there do. And so, you know, just hiring more black people as cops, man, that ain't no solution. You know, you have to have testing of these people. Make sure they ain't psychopaths or sociopaths. You got to make sure they don't have any kind of history themselves of having mental issues and whatnot. Make sure they should be regularly tested for steroid use, because I believe that is a major, not that I believe, I know. I've seen evidence from reports I've read that steroid use is rampant among police. They ain't lifting a whole bunch of weights to try to get all big and buff and whatnot. No, man, they taking shortcuts. They taking steroids, and that can cause them to go into roid rages and quicker to use violence, you know, like we saw the Spring Valley High cop in South Carolina when he tossed that young black girl across the floor in that high school and whatnot. We do need major reforms, right? But again, why did Bernie Sanders talk about reforms but then don't bring up the piece of legislation that he co-sponsored and introduced this year, back in November, it might have been late October, the Justice Is Not For Sale Act, which would do what? Which would abolish private prisons and jails. Why is that important to tackling this multi-pronged system that we're up against? Well, it's important because it is the GEO Group. It is the Correction Corporation of America. It is the Management Training Corporation. you know, there are just so many of these private prison companies that got what? Billions of dollars to spend on lobbyists to then go and bribe and give gifts to and to, you know, make promises to under the table and whatnot to these politicians to then pass this criminal justice legislation that has led to what many people are calling mass incarceration, but which is in fact a continuation of modern day slavery. Okay? That's what it is. And so that is why if you were to abolish private prisons and jails, well, you just eliminated the primary sponsor of that sort of legislation that has led to these racist outcomes, which have led to the United States, in fact, having the world's largest prison population, but then want to tell you they the land of the free and whatnot. Okay, so that's what, but how does he not mention it? How does he not bring that up? Can we put it on his age? I don't want to, you know, practice ageism or whatnot. Has he forgotten that he's introduced this legislation that's relevant to the topic that he's talking about? He did slip in there that, you know, he ain't spent a whole lot of time on it. Just a one liner about introducing legislation to end the ban on cannabis, the federal ban on cannabis, so that, you know, the DEA and you know, other federal agencies won't be going into these states where cannabis has been legalized and going after people and shutting down dispensaries and whatnot. I mean, very important piece of legislation. You know, both of those are very important pieces of legislation that will help us tackle 21st century slavery and human trafficking. But he doesn't think to mention it to a national audience that he's introduced this legislation when the opportunity came up in the context of the debate? Man, now here's another thing. I just took too many notes, man. But anyway, one of the other things I picked up on was they started talking about the heroin epidemic. Man, I noticed this several months ago. Is when they start talking about the heroin epidemic, and I'm talking about these politicians and whatnot, well, they sure sound a whole lot different than these politicians when there was a quote-unquote crack epidemic. When Hillary Clinton was out there pushing her husband's policies and, you know, the bipartisan legislation pushed by Democrats and Republicans, because people want to put all this on the Republicans. And, you know, they forget that this was bipartisan legislation that passed Congress, that Bill Clinton signed into law, that led to three strikes and you're a slave for life. And you know, the other policies and whatnot, the omnibus bill. And then Joe Biden wrote that. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, but when they talking about this heroin epidemic, which mostly affects who? White people. It's mostly white people that's shooting up this Afghan heroin, you know, that's coming over to this country from Afghanistan. How? You tell me how they getting it over here. You mean tell me the Taliban, who they tried to blame for, you know, the explosion in the poppy fields and whatnot. You know, are they responsible? Are they flying planes full of loads of heroin into this country? Where is all this cheap heroin coming from? It's coming from your government, people. It's coming from your government and private contractors of the government. That's how it's flooding the streets. But, you know, when it comes to talk about this heroin epidemic and whatnot, and I don't mean to make light of, you know, these people dying and whatnot, but, oh, now Hillary Clinton's no longer talking about zero tolerance and lock them up for life and all blah, blah, blah. No, she's talking about being more compassionate and providing resources to get these people help and to prevent suicides. And even President Obama, I think, had offered Virginia a grant, some federal grant money to help them, you know, hillbillies up in the hills of Virginia that's hooked on that meth and heroin and whatnot. You know, to get them help and, you know, give the first responders, you know, the kits that they need to prevent overdoses and whatnot. So, I mean, that just really, really struck me. Again, I want to end to the drug war. I'm not for the drug war. I'm not going to sit up here and say, you know, they should just go up and round up all them hillbillies, or they should come to my town, you know, my area, which has been described as the meth capital of the United States, and I mean, excuse me, of North Carolina. I'm not saying go and lock them all up and hunt them down like dogs, and you know, they shouldn't be smoking meth, and I'm against smoking meth, and you know, God said, you know, it's wrong to do this and wrong to do that. Look, I don't give a damn what they do, long as it don't involve me, you know. They can smoke all the meth they want to, you know what I'm saying? They can smoke all the meth they want to, as long as they not coming on this property to steal, you know, so that they can buy meth or do whatever it is meth heads do. You know, I don't care. I don't care. That's what freedom is. That's what liberty is. You have the liberty and the freedom to be a dumbass if you want to be. You know, that's what real freedom and liberty looks like. Not me trying to tell you how to live your life and whatnot and lock you up like I'm trying to help you out by putting you into slavery for smoking meth or smoking crack or smoking weed or smoking anything, you know. And so, but I do just want to point out that I see it as a practice of continuation of racism. When these people, these politicians start talking about, oh, we got to help her, you know, I blame the doctors. Weren't they blaming the doctors? They were blaming the doctors, right? They were blaming the doctors for overprescribing opiates and what. And this has led to these people getting hooked on prescription drugs and now since, you know, they using heroin and they blaming the doctors. And they got to do, the pharmaceutical industry got to do something. Oh, no, they weren't talking like that during the crack cocaine epidemic, were they? You know, and when it came out that the CIA was facilitating the smuggling of all of that cheap cocaine, so that Ronald Reagan and the CIA could raise money so that they could arm and fund the Sandinistas down there in South America, the death squads of South America, since Congress wouldn't allot any money for them to assist in the overthrow of those South American countries. Well, they just say, oh, we're funded by flooding the black community with drugs, and then we'll use that money to buy weapons, and then we can overthrow a democratically elected so-called socialist government. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, they're singing a different tune today, and it's because most of the people that's dying off of heroin, that's hooked on painkillers and whatnot, are white people. So now they want to be all gentle. They want to speak in compassionate language and use compassionate terms and not blame the victims for being hooked on heroin, but they want to blame the people that got them hooked on heroin through the over-prescribing of opiates and whatnot. So that really stood out to me. Let me see. Sanders, right, correctly, and Ron Paul said all this stuff. That's why I voted for Ron Paul in 2008. You know, I don't support candidates. Let's just get that out the way. I don't support candidates, and probably you don't either. You saying you're going to vote for somebody is not supporting them. Unless you sending them campaign donations and whatnot, you ain't no supporter. Unless you volunteer to make phone calls and knock on doors and distribute literature, you are not a supporter of that campaign. You just plan on voting for a person. And that's why I voted for Ron Paul, because he was saying if I was elected president, I would free every last single person who is in a federal jail locked up for nonviolent drug crimes. I would do that. I would eliminate the DEA. And these are things that President Obama could do right now, y'all. These are things he could do. He could do that. He could do that. Y'all just don't really. And people will make the excuse, mainly black people I talk to, will make the excuse, well, he can't do everything by himself, or he needs Congress, and Congress is blocking everything that he's doing. No, no, no. He is the chief executive officer of USA Inc., of this corporation called USA Inc. As the chief executive officer, he has control over, guess what, the executive branch. Guess where the Federal Bureau of Prisons fall under? What? What do you think? The executive branch. So as the executive officer, he can pardon every last single one of them people that's in there for non-violent drug offenses. He could do that. So, that just really burns me up. O'Malley talked about expanding drug treatment, and we should, instead of spending money, instead of giving all these cops billions of dollars annually, maybe it's in the hundreds of millions, I'm not sure. I don't have the exact statistics before me or the budget breakdown before me, but they get billions of dollars from the federal government to do what? To go out here and hunt down and lock up people for drugs. Okay, yes, they should stop doing that, along with ending the seizure and forfeiture laws and stuff. Even if they don't convict you of a crime, they just suspect you of one. You got a lot of cash on you. Maybe you was going to the bank for your church to make a deposit, you know, Monday morning after y'all took in the collection Sunday. And this is a true story. It has happened. And then a cop, you know, stops you for failing to signal or whatnot, and he sees you got a bag or whatnot, and then you, like a person uninformed, gives them permission to search your car, so they search the bag, they find $5,000 in cash. Oh, you got $5,000. This is drug money. We get to keep this, and they keep it. They keep it. But all of that money, it should not be invested in fighting a drug war. It should be invested in drug treatment so people can get help that won't help. You can't force people to do stuff, and it is apparent that you have no intention of sealing up any kind of borders or whatnot. You have no intentions of assisting these organizations in smuggling drugs into this country. So, you know, you have no intention of doing that. So, you know, Man, that is just an issue, man, that so many people are blind on, but you should be investing that money. If you was really bad about it, you should be helping people get off of drugs, all right? You should be helping them get off drugs if that's what they want to do. But you got a lot of functioning drug addicts out there, man. Look at President Obama. He admitted to using cannabis. You know, he even admitted to using cocaine in college. But he still made it through college. He still became president of the law review at Harvard. And he became CEO of America. So because he didn't get arrested, you know, he was able to function completely. Everybody that uses drugs is not an addict, all right? They use it the same way you may drink your wine, or you may drink your daily beer, or whatever it is, your schnapps or whatever, all right? So again, how you going to be calling yourself the land of the free and you locking up people and over laws designed to take away their freedom in liberty? So let me see if there anything else that I want to touch upon. Let me flip it over. Oh yeah, how can I end this show without mentioning the fact that I heard again so many lies about Libya? Why do they keep calling Gaddafi a dictator? Why did they call him that? Why are they calling him a dictator? Do they call the Queen of England a dictator? Do they call the King of Saudi Arabia a dictator? See, they only use that word when they want to demonize somebody. I mean, what a dictator actually means, the definition of the word is an absolute ruler. Somebody who has the final say over all matters and whatnot. All right, so that's all a dictator is. So, you know, but why they selectively use that label? And I'm just so sick and tired of them keep saying Gaddafi was a dictator. Gaddafi, a lot of people don't know this. Gaddafi supported the African National Congress, you know, the group that Mandela was with, that was fighting against apartheid and racism, white supremacy in South Africa. He supported that. He supported the Republican, the Irish Republican Army, the Freedom Group in Ireland, trying to get their freedom from the British and whatnot. He supported them. He supported a bunch of freedom movements around the world. All right. And so, you know, that's why they have demonized him and have been going after him, is because he was against racism and white supremacy. He again assisted many freedom movements in Africa that a lot of people don't know about. People want to say that he was like some brute. They want to make it seem like he was some brutal dictator. The very things that Bernie Sanders is up there talking about, he wants now, like free college tuition for everyone. All education in Libya was free under Gaddafi. Even university, they would even pay for you to go abroad and study at no cost to you. The government paid for that because they nationalized the oil, what people like to call socialism and whatnot. They nationalized the oil, and since it's a natural resource that should belong to everybody in the nation, and they shared the wealth. They gave newlyweds a dowry. I think I read that it was something like $5,000. Healthcare. Bernie Sanders and people talking about expanding Medicaid for all, a single payer. Healthcare is a universal right. Well, guess what? Who had healthcare as a right? Libyans did. They didn't have to pay for healthcare. The government paid for it. Guess what else? They ain't have a whole bunch of homelessness. They had a little bit of homelessness. I don't want to say they didn't have any. But from what I've read, you know, they did not have millions of people sleeping under bridges, sleeping in homeless shelters, sleeping on park benches and whatnot, like the United States does. So, you know, again, that just really irks me when I know, you know, that somebody is lying, and how so-called journalists aren't calling them out on their lies. So, again, what made Gaddafi a dictator? What made him a dictator? And if he was such a terrible dictator, then why did the Bush administration decide to normalize relationships in Cuba? Y'all better watch out. Y'all see what happened to Gaddafi in Libya when he said, you know what, I'm going to give up my chemical weapons, even though I need them for protection from you terrorists. I'm going to give them up. I'm going to give you a chance. I'm going to give you, let's reset relations and what. Y'all better be careful, Cuba. Look at what they did to Libya. He gave up his chemical weapons and all of that. He started hunting down them terrorists, them jihadis and whatnot. And that's why they normalized relationships in 2005 during the Bush administration, because he really was going after them terrorists. All right. So he was such a dictator then. Explain that to me. Explain that to me. And explain to me, Hillary Clinton, why those dudes that was murdering him, we saw it on video, was yelling, you know, Allah Akbar, you know, and shooting their guns in the air and all of that. That seemed like, you know, them look like some of them same jihadis that y'all claim to be fighting. You know, that's who they use. And so I knew all this. It was just really pissing me off. And one of the things that Hillary Clinton did that I will give her a point on is that she exposed some hypocrisy of Bernie Sanders. Because I didn't know that Bernie Sanders had voted for the resolution. I tried to find out who voted for it to authorize force, use of force in Libya, and I could not find the voting records on that. But Hillary Clinton said Bernie Sanders voted to overthrow Libya. So he wanted to get up there, and he was rightfully telling the truth about regime change and getting involved in these countries and overthrowing these countries and partnering with terrorists to overthrow these countries is what leads to, you know, these problems that the United States continues to have. But for him to say that, but then, you know, cause he couldn't say nothing when she pointed out, oh, you voted to overthrow Gaddafi in the murder of Gaddafi, cause it was a murder and it was against U.S. law. Again, pointing to the criminality of Hillary Clinton, not just her, cause, you know, Obama gave the green light, but it is against U.S. law to assassinate a head of state. We got Hillary Clinton on film standing in a town in Libya calling for the capture or assassination or killing. We can't wait till you capture or kill him, was her words. That's calling for assassination. And what was you going to capture him about? Them lies y'all made up that he had hired a bunch of African mercenaries and they was killing all these people. Complete fabrication. Complete. And then they stood on the side. Remember, they tried to paint this as a humanitarian mission. Oh, we went in there to save. all these people that Gaddafi was going to kill and blah, blah, blah. No, you stood by and you let your little terrorist dogs in Libya murder all those Africans and Libyans that remain loyal to their government. You watched them. You stood by and you watched them dogs murder, rape, and pillage their way across Libya. To the point where, what was it, earlier this year, we saw ISIL cutting off heads on the beaches in Libya. But I don't see you calling for, oh, we must do something. We must immediately pass this resolution and go in and save all these people from ISIL. No, 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 no. Because ISIL works for you. People, y'all need to wake up. These are not conspiracy theories. These are conspiracy facts that are out there. All you had to do is do your research and stop depending on corporate media as your main source of information and news. All right? So, that was really just egging me as I watched that debate Saturday night and them lying on Libya. They knew what was going to happen. This is why they overthrew Libya. Because they won, because Gaddafi, number one, had nationalized his oil. Number two, was going to propose that all of Africa unite, all African nations unite, much like the European nations united, under one currency, and then that currency be backed by actual gold. Instead of it just being paper monopoly money, that's what Gaddafi, and that would really cripple the stranglehold the Federal Reserve, the World Bank and these cronies have on the rest of the world with their predatory loans and whatnot. That paper funny money would have been exactly what it is in reality, worthless. When you got a currency that's backed by gold, they took them out for that. Then they had, made a move on the global chessboard. They wanted a way to arm those Syrian so-called rebels / terrorists. When the United States, the people of the United States rejected that and they couldn't get a bill passed to fund them, even to fund and arm them, even though they've been doing it anyway. But the American people, I remember that as clear as day. There was like, no, we ain't getting involved in another Iraq. Public sentiment was against it. So what they do? They overthrow Libya. Now the Libyan weapons stockpiles of weapons can then be given to the terrorists who then go to Syria with those weapons. Right? That's what happened, people. That's what's going on in Syria right now. So Hillary Clinton is a war criminal. She's a murderess. I don't even know if that's a word. Do we have to use gender distinctions when we're talking about cold-blooded killers? She's a murderess. She's a criminal. And so, really, Bernie Sanders is a part to that. Unless he going to plead ignorance and say, I didn't believe Bush and them, and I knew they were lying, and I voted against the Iraq war, but, they pulled one over. The Obama administration pulled one over on me on these lies that they told about Libya. I trusted that Susan Rice and all of those people were telling, Samantha Powers and Hillary Clinton, I trusted that they were telling the truth. Because the mainstream media was really promoting this stuff, and I thought it was true too. Now, I don't think he can claim ignorance though, and I'm glad she exposed him for that. Again, I will probably end up, if he gets the nomination, vote for Bernie Sanders, but that's only because of I want to see if he will actually work on passing the bill to abolish a major portion. A major cog in 21st century slavery and human trafficking, and that's the private prisons and jails. I want Wall Street out of the slavery business, A lot of people don't realize Wall Street was founded as an enslaved African market. They have always profited off of slavery, and they continue to do so to this day. And so, I will vote for the man, but it's a strategic vote. I know he's a Zionist, and I'm not down with Zionism because, as Malcolm X said, Zionism is racism. I'm not down with that. But You know, I do know we dealing with a corrupt system. I do know how the game is played. And so, you know, you have to get what you can get from whoever's giving it. And he's giving the most in terms of addressing 21st century slavery and human trafficking. But I have no illusions about who Bernie Sanders is. He's a Zionist, man. He's a Zionist. And he participated by way of voting for yet another illegal war. You know, and no, they didn't put boots on the ground or anything like that in Libya. So you didn't see a large, you know, loss of lives of Americans. But see, I don't just care about Americans. I care about people, period, particularly innocent people. And you can go to YouTube and you can watch all those videos of those jihadist dogs. All right. And I'm calling them a dog for dogs for a certain reason. It ain't no the reason why. But those jihadist dogs go on that killing spree. All of those videos are on YouTube. You know, Hillary Clinton should be up on charges now for exposing state secrets. You know, that's what the whole video of her getting the confirmation that Gaddafi had been murdered by those, you know, jihadist dogs. And she was laughing and cackling. I mean, that alone should give you pause on voting for that woman. That's just evil. Who laughs about the murder of someone? You know? I know she put the whole thing, it was her plan. She put the whole thing in motion. That she wanted to be seen as a commander in chief. That's why she got appointed as Secretary of State. They were setting her up to become the next president or whatnot. And she wanted to be seen as, I'm a woman, but I can be just as vicious as any of these white males. And I mean, that was classified information. That had to be top secret. Because you are admitting to a plot to assassinate a sitting head of state, which is against U.S. law as well as international law. But who's going to prosecute these war criminals? Who's going to prosecute? I've heard, you know, something from somebody out there in the militia community who has called into, you know, various programs of this station talking about there's going to be a reset in America and all these criminals are going to be arrested and put on trial. But, you know, I'm not going to hold my breath on that. I'm not going to hold my breath on that. These people do what they want to do because they can. And because they can get away with it and never be brought to justice. So that's why I don't care about this law and justice talk and all of this. We must obey the law and the respectability politics. When have these evil corporate officers of USA ain't ever been respectable? So don't tell other people out here on the street we gotta be respectable. We gotta, you know, engage in respectability politics. We shouldn't be shutting down highways. We shouldn't be out there in the face of the police, arguing with the police. We shouldn't be blockading the mall or anything like that. Man, don't talk to me about that kind of stuff, man. All right, don't talk to me. We live in a chaotic, one of the most corrupt places on the face of the earth, but many people are brainwashed to the point that they just can't see it. Or they refuse to see it because it's not affecting them. You know, it's not really affecting me. You know, I live in one of the safe zones. I mean, they can come get me at any time. I'm not ignorant. But I'm not being consistently stopped and frisked or my car. I'm not being pulled over while I'm driving while black in my little rural town. You know, I don't have to go very far to get to the grocery store, to the post office, to the convenience store, to the gas station. I don't even have to drive 2 or 3 miles in this little rural area. I don't have to go. And I don't, there's a reason I don't like going to, Charlotte. I don't like going to, cause man, I'm a target. I got a target on my back. Well, really, my whole body is a target. My black skin is a target. So I'm not being constantly under that threat of violence like other black people and non-white people in these other communities like that. So it ain't affecting me personally. I ain't never been to prison. Don't plan to ever go. All right. Not cause of anything I'm doing wrong that's immoral or whatnot. I don't never plan to go. Never been to prison. Been to jail a couple of times, but never been to prison. All right. So, you know, I could just sit back and just hunt, grow food, and not worry about any of you people out there. You know, but my conscience won't let me. My mother raised me to be a compassionate person and to care about other people and what happens to other people. So, you know, and I look at that, not just black people. I care about all people, global people. You know, I care about humanity. And you know, we have some of the most inhumane people in the halls of power globally around this world. And you know, something's going to have to be done. Ask me what, you know, well, we'll have to have a private conversation on that. But, you know, again, these militia groups, the people that's, you know, sending messages out there talking about how they going to arrest all these criminals and return the United States to a land of freedom and liberty. When has that ever been the case for black people in this country, for indigenous people in this country? It ain't never been the case. But, you know, I'm all for it. I'm all for putting these criminals on trial. I'm all for it and starting over from scratch, dissolve the corporation, and let's create a republic. But we're going to have to redo the Constitution and whatnot. We might can borrow some of the stuff from it, just like they borrowed some of the stuff from other governments of different people around the world, like the Iroquois Nation, an indigenous nation that once existed on this continent. But, you know, I'm not holding my breath for y'all to do anything. So I'm going to continue my media operations and hopefully enlighten some people as to what is really going on in this country. All right. Tando Radio Show. Brother Dave is back. Brother Dave is back. Certainly looking forward to his program coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, the Tando Radio Show. Today they will be talking about economic issues. A lot of fraud is going on, as you know, to be expected in Wall Street and whatnot. And so that's what his topic is going to be about. He is very knowledgeable on economics, on how these financial systems work. And, you know, a lot of people should tune in his program and learn about creating what is the difference between money, currency, and wealth, you know. I'm learning a lot from him. So Tando Radio Show, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, usually come on Monday through Friday. But as his family has been in a major transition, he has been off the air. But he will be on air today. So looking forward to it, Brother Dave. Again, apologies that we had a mix-up. Something happened with our scheduled guests. We will try to get them back. It's going to be probably going to have to be either Friday or after the first of the year, because we do have a guest who has confirmed, and I talked to her again today. Let me pull up my calendar for the program and let you know who we will have on as a guest tomorrow. And she will pardon me if I don't pronounce her first name correctly. Sikavu? I think that's how you pronounce her name, but we will have Miss Hutchison on. She recently wrote a book. It's called White Knights, Black Paradise, which is about the People's Temple Agricultural Project, which is, you may know as Jonestown, with Jim Jones and all those people drunk that poison Kool-Aid and got killed. Well, she wrote a book from the perspective or analyzing the black women who are a major part of that movement. Who were the primary victims of what some people call a massacre, and getting all those people. And so, you know, we'll be talking about her book and religion in general, because, you know, religion can ruin people's lives. Ain't nothing wrong with spirituality, but religion will get you in trouble. It will get you in trouble. It will brainwash you and have you doing things that you otherwise might not do. All right. Nothing wrong with spirituality. I practice spirituality. I believe in a creator. Although my relationship with the creator, I like to keep personal and whatnot. But, you know, religion, I quit participating in organized religion over 20 years ago. And you're looking at a person or listening to a person who almost became an ordained minister. My eyes got opened up and I left that path that I was on to becoming a deeply, more deeply involved in organized religion. So we're looking forward to speaking to Ms. Hutchison. Again, the name of her book is White Knights, Black Paradise, which is about Jonestown, but looking at it in the perspective of black women in these sort of movements and religions and whatnot. All right, so that's the end of the program. Again, be back on air 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Again, join us. Hopefully, Ms. Hutchison will be able to join us. We'll try to get our guests rescheduled. If the news isn't old by the end, we were going to talk about their observations of the trial of William Porter. I have heard people. I'm thinking about Brother Brown on the Lotus Place show, one of the programs that come on our network. And he was talking about, what was that, last week on Friday night? And they were talking about it, and he was saying, like, they really overcharged William Porter. That's that black cop. And he, you know, tried to get Freddie Gray some help, even though he could have went further. And I do agree, he could have picked up the doggone phone and called for an ambulance. But he did make an attempt to get Freddie Gray some help. By telling his supervisor and whatnot, the defense did bring up the fact that, you know, he was poorly trained by his so-called supervisors and whatnot. So, you know, I tend to agree with Brother Brown. I think they did overcharge him. We've seen that a lot as a tactic to get these cops off is to overcharge them and not, you know, apply the appropriate charges. And so, I was looking to speak to Mr. Grand Pre about that since he lives in Baltimore and was in that courtroom every day. But I'm sure, you know, one of our media producers, Sister Media Whitlock, lives in Baltimore as well. So I'll try to get somebody through her as well if we can't reconnect with Mr. Grand Pre about it. So apologies for that. I said all that to say I'm sorry. I don't know what occurred. We would love to have spoken with him about that, but, you know, maybe next time, maybe next time. Recognize the fact that you live behind enemy lines of USA, Inc. There's a corporation who has destroyed the so-called constitutional republic that was founded in this nation. They never actually stopped practicing slavery. It's in the 13th Amendment, except, you know, for punishment for crime. You know, we won't put you into slavery unless we can convict you of a crime. We know how the criminal justice system works in this country on getting convictions, right? So if you recognize that there is also a battlefield out there, the modern day slave catchers is gunning people down just about every day. I would say, you know, thinking about some work of some black activists every 28 hours, you know, a black person is killed by a security guard, a police officer, or a vigilante or something like that. Well, you know what? I think it's about every 18 hours, every 18 hours, a person is killed by police in this country. And a very huge percentage of them are unarmed, and these are not justifiable killings. So recognize the fact it's a war zone out there. It's a battlefield out there. And casualties are being created every day. And you need to develop battlefield awareness. Some people call it situational awareness. You need to be aware of what is going on around you. You need to know these things so that you can decrease the likelihood that you will become a victim of the system or victim of anyone out there. All right. So with that said, again, until tomorrow, this is Scotty signing off. Peace and blessings to all.